Okay, we take our seats, please. And once again, I want to thank our sponsor, BASF Color Biotics, for allowing us to have the opportunity to hear Lowell Catlett at our keynote luncheon. So thanks again, BASF. And while I'm at it, I want to thank again TH Blended for sponsoring last night's reception. And AgriCoatings is the sponsor for this evening's reception. So thank you to all of our sponsors. Our next session is on continuing our theme for this meeting, it appears, on transportation management systems. And we have a panel of two speakers, including Anthony Brocato, who is Vice President of Sales and Residual Product Procurement for Swanson Bark and Wood Products in Longview. I knew that. Washington. And also Karen Stettner, who is Supply Chain Manager at Garrick LLC in Cleveland, Ohio. And two things that are not on these resumes that you can read, and go ahead and read the resumes, but two things that are not on the resumes is that Anthony is Secretary Treasurer of the Council and has been Secretary Treasurer for some time. So I want to thank him for his dedicated service as a director and an officer of the council in doing this. And Karen Stettner doesn't say so, but she's a valued member of the Transportation Committee and did a Washington fly-in on behalf of the membership in May to stomp the hill and lobby for better regulations for our industry in the transportation industry. So thank you, Karen. Outstanding job. So first, Anthony.
Thank you, Bob. Very nice introduction. For openers, I think I have to steal a bit from Chris Littlefield. I know he mentioned this morning when he talked on safety. My opening is similar. I'm not an expert on transportation management systems, but I can tell you from Swanson's standpoint how we've implemented some management systems to better manage our fleet and transportation and some takeaways from it. Specifically, I'm going to be talking about from the raw material procurement side. Swanson, this is an overview of our facility. We run about 75 acres, single site facility. We're sourcing hundreds of thousands of yards annually of raw material, wood product material, whether it's sawdust, bark, chips, that kind of thing, from sawmills in the area. So it's very critical that we have a strong grasp on the method in which we're bringing that material in addition to the relationships with the sawmills we're sourcing that from. This shot just gives you kind of a regional footprint. This is more from the outbound side. Where we're sourcing is much more closer into our facility, so really from the Canadian border down to maybe southern or central Oregon at the farthest south and west of the Cascades. This area is widely considered as the wood basket of the Pacific Northwest, heavily dense in sawmills, forest products industry. But what really got us looking at transportation management systems was coming out of the recession this past round. There was a lot of consolidation, a lot of sawmills shuttered. Material, as it happens around the country, got very scarce. So then become, how do we provide a better value and a better service to the sawmills and anchor ourselves into their waste stream to make sure that we have got first right of refusal on that raw material. As the economy has grown, that's become less of an issue in terms of access, but we still take it very seriously because at some point in time, that pendulum could or most likely will swing the other way. So we need to make sure that we're in a position to have a strong grasp on those raw materials. To tell you a little bit about our private fleet, we do contract out, work with Dale Lemons as well. We've got about 28 power units and a mix of open top gondola or open top trailers, live floor, what we call possum bellies, that we have our tipper tip the raw material out on. And that's probably what we use to source the raw material. We can use a lot of outside carriers to get the finished product to the customer, but when it comes to relationships and securing that raw material, we really rely on our own fleet. So not that long ago, we invested in a fleet management system called Zonar, very similar to, Dale has got a similar program, but it's web-based using telematics. We can see where all of our trucks are at any given time on the road, not only where they're at, but what speed they're going, are they idle, and it allows our dispatchers in real time to change the course of a truck. If there's traffic, if there's an issue, maybe there's a more issue or a more urgent pressing issue we need to redirect a truck to, our dispatchers can make that decision in real time. Additionally, is some of the tools that come with it. You'll notice here's an overshot of a sawmill. We can pull that up right on our computer in our transportation office and run a pathway report. So you can see the route in which a driver goes into a sawmill, where they go under these bin bunkers where the residuals are dumped into. Not only is that critical to seeing how our drivers are getting into a mill or if there's a holdup or an issue, but also training. If we bring on a new driver, or if there's a change in layout at a sawmill, we can proactively train a driver so he's not learning on the spot when he goes into that sawmill, maybe a different route or a different way he's got to get in there, who we need to get in touch with. An anecdotal story here on that. The other things we've introduced just very recently are electronic tablets or electronic logs. Luckily, you see that ring in there, we're in most of our trips are within the 100-mile radius, air miles of our plant. We do have some drivers go out farther beyond that. So that's been a very important tool, specifically the two-way texting. Our dispatchers, instead of having to call the driver or get him in radio range, they can launch a text to those tablets. The tablet does not read, the driver can't read the text until he's clearly stopped and pulled off to the side of the road. And so he knows whether he needs to call our dispatcher on a private cell phone when the truck's in park. Or he can read that and it will give you directions to make another trip. Or, hey, after you make this next stop or delivery, clean out your truck, go to XYZ mill and make a pickup. So in terms of communication, it's eased the flow of traffic. Now we used to have three dispatchers fielding inbound calls from drivers and where they need to go next. Now we have one dispatcher basically launching these text reports out to their tablet to let them know where they need to be at next. And if there is an issue, pull over, call, we'll talk about it. So it's really lightened the load of the inbound communication and be much more specific. So that's a system that we've perfected, we've added to. There's some a la carte items you can add on to it. So it's been incredibly helpful in terms of timeliness and being proactive. But the other system that we introduced, specifically to the sawmills that we're managing, is a series and network of cameras that's a live feed back to our transportation office. You can see here, this is a cedar mill, and there's cameras in the bunker. And basically, our dispatchers can watch that and get a feel for what the pace of the sawmill is. We're in constant communication with the sawmill, but from a service standpoint, that's the last thing that a sawmill manager wants to think about is the residuals. All they want is to make sure that their mill doesn't get plugged. They don't have to shut down production. This allows them to take their mind off of that. Our trucks are timed. In compilation with the Zonar program, we can see if they've slowed down production, if they've sped up, if there's been a change in the material quality. We've had plenty of situations where we've committed to handling a sawmill Monday through Friday. Whatever reason, we don't get a phone call, they decide to run a Friday night shift or a Saturday morning shift. Our dispatchers are able to see, oh my gosh, the sawmill is kicked on, they're started. I've got a truck en route. I'm going to send it in, and then second to that, I'll call the mill and say, hey, by the way, we see you guys started up. Well, is that a permanent thing or is it a one-off deal? So again, it allows Simon and I to think about the residual issue. In addition to that, it saved us from a cost standpoint, because there's been times where there's a type of material that we're going to pay for and maybe they start running a different type of material. We're able to go back and save that. So that video actually has a 7-day lag time of it saved. So there's been plenty of times where maybe a maintenance crew has come in and started to run cleanup on a Sunday, and half that bunker is full of cleanup material that's basically just a dog's breakfast of all kinds of gunk. And then they'll run cedar in the morning. Our truck will go in there, and the load's completely contaminated. We can shoot them a video clip and say, hey, your maintenance group was running on Sunday evening. You can see what happened here. So it just cuts through all the back and forth communication and paper documentation of what was in the load and what time it went in there to pick it up. So those two systems working in concert have, again, they resulted in a huge competitive advantage in securing our raw material stream. You can see here there's a shot from inside of our dispatch office. Again, multiple mills, screenshots. So you can see on the left-hand side, all the little red arrows there, that's where the trucks are out on the road. And again, making real-time decisions on what mill is the most important, is a truck en route, or hey, wait a minute, they've slowed down, we don't have to be so quick to launch this truck. The other thing is not launching a truck too early and having the driver sit at a mill for an hour or 45 minutes. That adds up over time. They've gotten it down to within 10 to 15 minutes, that bunker's ready to be dumped out and the truck can get in there and get out. The other aspect is our ability to now be more efficient at backhauling. Because we've got this real live data coming in and we're managing our trucks in this way, it's empowered our dispatchers to be much more aggressive. And do they have the time to go pick up another load somewhere else or deliver it of a finished bulk product or maybe drop an open top trailer and go grab a flatbed, bags and go deliver that. From a data analytics standpoint, in telematics, there's a variety of reports you can run. This has made us much more efficient from an understanding our true costs. This is a pretty typical report you can run. It's a speed report. Our dispatchers and our logistics manager coach our drivers to what we call flatline driving, basically using cruise control as much as possible. So he set his speed parameter at 62 miles an hour, with telling the drivers that they can't go over 65. So this is one specific driver. They were able to check what hours he was driving. He was on the interstate. And you can see he kept really to that 62 mile an hour mark and very little variation versus a driver that's doing a lot of braking, not using cruise control, throttling up a lot. So now we can start to understand that the fuel economy and coach the drivers as they come back in, how they're driving the equipment or how they're running the equipment. The other aspect is our average idle times. That was huge once we started tapping into this and really getting a better grasp on our costing of sourcing the raw materials is how long are these trucks sitting at the mill on average, and is it something can we control to shorten that, or is it something we can go to the mill and get their support? Maybe there's they've got a loader that's out, they're moving product around, so our truck is just having to wait a little bit extra longer and the driver doesn't want to speak up. But from a training and coaching standpoint to efficiency, the reports, I think we've only really scratched the surface of how we can get better information on that. The other thing is your turn times per day or per week. So again, about efficiency of the trucks and then loaded miles. Let's see here, go to the next one. Talking about from a coaching standpoint with our employees or our drivers, there was initially a lot of resistance in buying. A lot of the drivers, not only drivers, but just our employees, they see these systems, they see these maps, it's real life data, it's that big brother mentality. Oh my gosh, they're watching us. What are they using all that for? So we've been very proactive on letting the drivers in understand these reports and how the data is collected, what we're looking for, what we're trying to gain from it. We even put in our driver's room where they come in to get their paperwork, a screen that has access to the mills so they can actually go look at the mills themselves as they come in, or look at where some of their coworkers are out on the road. So they have an understanding of how that system works. The other thing when we introduced tablets, part of it was electronic pre-trip and post-trip inspections instead of paper. Again, the whole Big Brother fear came in. We actually brought in a couple of our drivers that had been with us for, at least 20 years, probably the most averse to change or any technology, had them demo these tablets. And once they took a hold of it and got to learn how much or less paperwork that they no longer had to use or go through, and how quickly their pre-trips can be. There's RFID tags throughout the trailer and the truck. They can just go and scan the tablet to show they hit each spot on the truck. They became the biggest proponents of it, and to the rest of the workforce, actually became trainers for it. So buy-in went very smooth on that. Also made drivers empowered to make their own decisions. We have drivers running late at night when there are no dispatchers. We have drivers running at times on the weekends. By having that system available to them, we've given them parameters, but within those parameters, the ability to make a decision if a mill is kicked up and is running harder, you can make a basic call an audible and go and take care of a mill that might be plugged. And so that, again, is given a lot of faith and confidence in the systems we put in from a driver's standpoint. And then one of the biggest issues I would say is how often this information and live feedback exonerates our drivers. More times than not, probably 9 out of 10 times when you get someone that calls in, an angry citizen on the highway, "Oh my gosh, your truck just blew by me going 80 miles an hour, trying to run me off the road." Immediately we're able to go back, look at the time, the speed, where they were at, if they were braking hard. Again, 9 times out of 10, it was just someone oblivious driving down the road, not knowing that our truck was going 55 miles an hour, trying to get up to speed and get on the road. And we share that with our drivers. They really appreciate that. Where before it was, you almost kind of, it's tough not to listen to the citizen or the customer. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's really important to provide clarity in any technology introduced, whether it's a management system or whatever it may be, to really provide clarity around the purpose and use of these tools, not only to your customer or vendor, but to your employees. A lot of the sawmills that we talked to, we told them about the system we wanted to implement. They were very worried about us having visual on how their sawmill was running. But once they realized it was to their benefit, something they didn't have to think about, it was a value add service, they really had no issue. And again, with our employees, once we showed them what we were trying to do with this, there was no, I can't, it's been a few years since I've heard anyone complain or, "Oh my gosh, they're watching us on this big screen." So that's been a key part of that adapting that technology. So that kind of sums up where we're at. Any questions?
Do you guys use any in-truck cameras, either for the road or the driver?
Good question. So we're actually looking at that right now. We're looking at a couple different companies. That technology has evolved tremendously in the last couple years. Oftentimes, it's a heartbreaking or a jolt that would trigger it. And I think that's something we'll probably see in our trucks very, very shortly.
You said this was for most of your raw materials. What are you doing as far as getting your finished stuff out?
Right, so we do use the Zonar system. It's critical in use of getting the finished product to customers. Very similar. We do have a legacy ERP system. We've got a scale master right now. He's doing a lot of manual entering in, so that's our next step from the outbound side is streamlining that a lot more. And I can't really speak to currently which systems we're looking at on that. But from the fleet management software, that's critical in a lot of time. We can call a customer ahead of time, or if there's a traffic issue, they hate the delivery, or if there's going to a Lowe's or a Home Depot, we can see if there's going to be delay in delivery way ahead of time, just from traffic patterns and if there's any road work going on, it'll show up in that system.
Your bin cameras, there are a few questions about those. Are you tapped into a Wi-Fi system that's sending the signal, and how durable are they?
Yep, so the cameras we're using, there's a variety of cameras you can choose from, but they are weatherproof casing. A lot of them have lights built in, so at night it is showing a light in there. Initially, when we started this, we were using cell phone technology. We partnered with Verizon or someone to get a live feed up. Now a lot of the sawmills were able to tap into their Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is much more prevalent. We've actually brought in electricians to run an internet cable out to the bin directly into the camera. So out of the 10 plus cameras we got out there, I think there's only one out in a remote area that's using a cell signal. Everybody else is tapped into the mill Wi-Fi. All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Hello. My name is Karen Stetner, and before I get started, I just really want to thank Bob and obviously the whole committee for putting together a transportation discussion. I'm sure that there's a mix of people in the room who work closely with transportation. I'm sure there are some people who, like Anthony said yesterday, it's a black box that you don't want to open. So hopefully I can add a little bit of value and teach you a little bit something about the trucking industry and my roles and responsibilities at Garrick. I'm really on the front lines. I talk to independent owner-operators, brokers, trucking companies every single day, dispatching trucks. We have our own trucks, but probably 80% of the work that I do is all dispatching to independent owner-operators. So really fielding the inbound calls, and so hopefully this can be a change and give you some ideas. So not really talking about technology too much, a little bit, but mine's more so transportation and how we can adapt to the industry and its changes. So the things I'll go over are just some trend lines in the trucking industry. I know we all like graphs and numbers. I don't think anything I'm going to tell you is going to surprise you, but I just think that graphs are cool. Next are tools that we use to find carriers and build our carrier base. Next are, why is it doing that? Can I have it not on a timer?
That shouldn't be.
Oh. Let me try this again. Oh, well. I'll work with it. Next are strategic shipping points. I'll talk about product diversity, alternatives to trucking, specifically with barge and rail, and then we'll open it up for questions and comments. Okay, so first, trend lines in the trucking industry. Everything that I'm about to show you is data that's pulled from DAT Solutions. Is anyone familiar with this website? All right. So one person, two people, three people. So they call themselves the original load board. So they were founded in 1978. They were called Dial a Truck, and they were found in Portland, Oregon. And they call themselves, this is straight from their website, they call themselves the largest truckload freight marketplace in North America. They provide brokers, carriers, news organizations, folks like us in different industries, analysis based on market trends, and they get all their information. Obviously, being a load board, they've really capitalized on that. So they have over 270 million freight matches and a database of 57 billion market transactions just in 2018. So a lot of data. All right. This is going to be on a timer, so I apologize. So I pulled this. They send out a weekly trend lines report, and I pulled the one from the first week of September. So this fluctuates based on the week. They're always going to be different, so I couldn't really go back and find one for like May or, you know, a specific time period. So I just use the current one just so you can kind of see what sort of data and analytics that they have to offer. So kind of to walk through, so these at the top are all, they are comparing, obviously, these percentages by week. So from the last week of August compared to the first week of September. Then they'll compare these, I guess, I don't know what you want to call them, these trend lines by month. So from the month before, so from August 2018 compared to July, and then year over year, so August 2017 compared to August 2018. So I'll just kind of walk through some of like the verbiage here. So the first one are spot market loads. And let me just say this, just I know you're probably aware, but this is data just from DAT. So like whatever people are posting on DAT, that's what it's pulling from. Like this is not necessarily a government, you know what I mean? This is, you just have to take it kind of with a grain of salt. I think they do a good job of giving you an overall idea, but just something to kind of keep in mind. So spot market loads and spot market capacity. So they're not taking into consideration, I like to give the example of like Costco, and they have all of their loads are contracted out to Swift Transportation. So they're not counting that in spot market loads and spot market capacity because those trucks are like kind of already called for. So these are all just folks like me who are going on the load board and posting all their available freight that they can't cover with, you know, their own trucks or the dedicated guys. So you can see the spot market loads week over week. It's down 11% from the month, also down, and then over the year it's up 27%. So the same thing for the market capacity. The capacity is down. Over month it's up, which is good for us, and then over the year it's all, well actually no, I'm sorry, when it's negative that means it's good for us. When it's up, then so the capacity is increased from 2017 to 2018. Next are the load to truck ratios. They're basically all the same thing, but since when you post loads on this load board, you choose like the truck type, so they can further, you know, pull that information by truck type, which is really important. So the how they define this, you know, load to truck ratio is the number of loads posted for every truck posted. Seems pretty self-explanatory. So for every one van posted, there might be 50 loads that are posted. So that ratio, or that load to truck ratio, is up week over week from, well, from the last week of August to the first week of September. And then for vans, compared August 2018 to July 2018, it's down. So the van load to truck ratio is down. So that means that there were less loads on the board, essentially. So that's kind of good for us. And then obviously year over year is up. So I'm not gonna go through all of them, but you can kind of have an idea. And then at the last one is fuel prices, as we know, big increase, 24% from 2018 to 2017 to 2018. Okay, so now that you kind of have the verbiage, so this is like a 3-year comparison. So this is the flatbed load to truck ratio. So these are the loads that are posted. And then, so for every one flatbed that's posted, there was, I like to use April. So for every one flatbed that was posted, there was 100 loads that were posted on average in the month of April. So just let that sink in for a second. Compared to, you know, 2016, 2017, okay, you know, a fair increase, but quite a spike there.
Is that a national number or in the area that you guys operate?
This is national. Yeah, this is national across the board. Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah, I don't really have an answer, but yes, you're right. That's why I say, like, take it kind of, like, not as a grain of salt, like, it's a nice overview, but yeah, definitely. So, if I post a load and I'm the shipper, kind of what she's saying is then a broker is going to turn around and post my same load as the broker, and then twofold, threefold. So it could be a little skewed. I don't, you know, I'm not a DAT, like, I don't work for him, so I'm not afraid to say, like, yeah, like, it probably is a little skewed. I don't know if it would throw it all off, but I would feel comfortable that that's probably pretty accurate. So, and again, this is not just lawn and garden industry. These are everyone on the load board. So we're really competing, you know, at that time, steel, roofing, the construction industry. So we're all fighting for the same trucks at the same time. So it really is, it's quite a challenge. And then the same thing for vans. There are definitely more vans out there than there are flatbeds. So you can see that really the peak was for every 10 loads that were posted, there was one van. So doesn't seem too crazy compared to like 100. But again, year over year, as you can imagine, is an increase. Okay, and then just for May, just for fun, I just wanted to see, and obviously you could tell by the map, or by the graph, I mean, that the van load to truck ratio in the month of May, which was, I feel like, everyone's highest shipping month, depending on where you are in the country, was 6.8, and then flatbed load to truck ratio was 99.2. So again, for every 99 loads that were posted, there was one guy out of flatbed posted looking for loads. So that's where it gets fun, negotiating freight rates from that. Okay, and then the last one is just, I just kind of wanted to put this in here. I don't think the coloring is like that great. I wish they actually kind of did something different. But really what this shows is this isn't isolated to like one geographic region. This is really a nationwide problem, I guess. So the load to truck ratio, if there are more than 18 loads for every one truck, they're this dark green color. So I mean, it's a good majority of the whole entire United States. All right, I'm not going to go into this too much, but just some factors that we feel have impacted the trucking industry. The economy, as everyone has said, is booming. People want to build things, people want to go out, spend money, so more things need to get transported. The weather played a huge factor, I think, for a lot of people, especially in like the Ohio Valley and probably Minnesota, like the mid-north. I mean, we had, it felt like a forever long winter, and then all of a sudden it was beautiful in spring and everyone wanted mulch and soil. So that just really compounded on the fact. Obviously the driver shortage, ELD implementation, I'm not even gonna go into it. I just wanted to kind of show the economy. I just chose Home Depot, obviously being one of the customers of many people here. You know, the biggest DIY retail store in the country. Their earnings from 2017 to 2018 were up. You know, they had an increase of anywhere, you know, 8% in sales, and their gross profit was up 9.6%. So people are buying things. So that's great for us, not so great for us trying to move everything. All right. So moving on to the tools that we use to build our carrier base. Primarily load boards and databases. So I just put some of the logos up here. So we have DAT, Trucking Planet, Bulk Loads, Truck Stop, and then our own load board, Gairtran. So this is what we use and our team uses like every single day. This is pretty much their sole focus, is kind of narrowed in on this. So the load boards, we have our own load board, and it's called Gairtran, and we have it connected with our in-house operating system. So anytime that we have a load that's ready to ship, and if we don't have, you know, Bob, our preferred carrier, to haul it, we'll put it on the board, and it will automatically get posted to our load board, and anyone can go on there and view it. So it's really nice not having to like manage it and manually post things all the time. We also have a daily email blast that gets sent out. So it's really about getting your loads out there and for people to know that you're here and you have freight to offer. And lastly, GearTran's also cool because it'll spider out, that's what we call it, so like it'll automatically post to like a bunch of other load boards too. So everything that we have on GearTran will spider out. So it's pretty cool, very cool tool. A lot of carriers really like that. They don't have to call in and say, hey, what do you got going on today? You know, just look on GearTran, everything's on there. And then we use independent load boards. DAT is probably the biggest one. I mean, out of all the calls and the packets that we process and we say, hey, how did you hear about us? I mean, DAT across the board, people aren't afraid to tell us. So DAT, Truck Stop is also a big one. Those are probably the top two load boards that we utilize. And then for all of our bulk loads, they actually automatically get posted from GearTran and spider out to bulk loads now, but that one's really cool too. And then, so those three load boards, we pretty much manually post to DAT and Truck Stop. Like someone, unfortunately, sits on there and posts all of our available freight. And then there are a lot of cool tools that you can utilize from those load boards. So we get a lot of great trucking leads. Whether it's call-ins or we have the ability to see on Truck Stop who looked at your load, so you can, you know, take the initiative and call them and say, hey, would you want to haul this load? I saw that you, you know, had looked at it. And then for bulk loads now, they have like an email feature, so you can just send an email blast, you know, whenever there are looks or trucks posted in the area, you can actually email all these folks and say, hey, this is what we have. So it's really just being obnoxious and telling everyone that you have a lot of loads to move and pray that someone will say, oh yeah, I'll take that. And then lastly, Trucking Planet, they have a database that is from the FMCSA, and it is a ginormous database of every trucker with an MC number who is registered through the FMCSA, and you can filter it by state, you can filter it by city, zip, however you want to do it. So we download this database annually and kind of pick and choose and filter what areas that we want to start calling. And you know, our team will get on the phones and start making calls to truckers. So it's fun. Talk to a lot of characters out there. All right. The next is strategic shipping points. So again, just how can we work the freight on our end? If we have trucking capacity in a lane, how do we work with vendors who are closer to our manufacturing plants? So you can see those are all of our locations. And it's great when you can have a vendor who is near one of your plants and you have the capability to save the company money and find your own truck to pick it up for cheaper than what your vendor would deliver it for. So just another way that we can save on freight and save on the overall cost. And hopefully, when you're in control of the freight, you're not relying on someone else and their lead time. And it's like, when I have a truck, like I'm sending it in. Also, we always get FOB and delivered pricing. I mean, it just kind of goes hand in hand. You just never know if there's a lane that'll work out. So next, product diversity. I just added this in because I thought that if you diversify your product line and have different commodities available, that it at least provides you an opportunity to maybe utilize different truck types or different forms of transportation, so that way we're not all chasing after the flatbed. And I think some of that kind of goes with, are there different ways that we can get product to our customer? You know, how much is grandma's garden, how much are they buying every year? Can they take it in bulk? I mean, do they have to take it in bags? Like, what are they doing with it? So trying to work the freight from all ways. Unfortunately, we really take time and look at the freight for a lot of these lanes and customers. So trucking alternatives. I know that there's more than barge and rail, but I'm just going to kind of go over what we utilize, which are barge and rail. Surprise. So the first one is rail, and the products that we typically haul are lightweight aggregate, white marble, and decorative stone. Really anything else, I mean, you name it, it can probably go on there if it's a bulk aggregate or mulch. Typically, depending on the stone, you can get about 100 tons per rail car. So we use it both inbound and outbound. So depending on your facility and its capabilities, you know, we bring bulk in and we ship out. So we use BNSF, CSX, Norfolk Southern, and then our local IORY, which is in Ohio. And just alone in 2018, we moved roughly 1,000 rail cars, easy. Next is barge. So you can see here, we don't ship to all those points. I mean, we can, but that just kind of gives you an idea of all the places that you can ship barge, which I think maybe people don't comprehend how far you can get product in all the different locations. So our points of origin, Baton Rouge, Saltillo, Tennessee, and Chattanooga. And then really, like I said, any of these points on here are feasible for delivery. So typical products that we ship are bark, lightweight aggregate, again, decorative stone, any other commodity you can think of, we can put it on a barge. So you can get approximately 1,500 to 1,600 tons. Probably need a customer or someone who's willing to take that much product, but we do it, and we can get anywhere from 35 to 45,000 yards, really depending on the density of the product. And then I just have nice pictures, because we all like pictures. So this is our point in our plant in Saltillo, Tennessee, loading some barges here on the Tennessee River.
Yay.
And obviously with barge and rail, you know, there's a trade-off. So you may have a great form of transportation, but you know, your lead time is definitely affected. The weather, for sure. I know Rick can attest to that. If there's not enough water in the river, then you're gonna have issues. So, and probably on the flip side as well. So trade-offs to everything, but just there are other forms of transportation out there if you are able to mine that and, you know, find customers to take it. Okay, that's it. Questions? Yes.
What's the federal motor carrier regulation on using these boards? Do you have to have a broker's license?
No. No, because you can sign up as a shipper. So we're like registered as a shipper on these load boards, and they're not like government. Well, I get what you're saying. Like, we're not working as a broker because we're moving our own freight. So if I was to go on there and start posting loads for, I don't know, Costco, then yeah, I would probably have to have a broker's license. But we're not doing that,
so
just for our load boards.
But you can't grab a truck. You can't go on there and grab a truck. You're not an owner-operator.
Well, you can't. No, you can. You can. You can use it both ways. Like, I can go on there as a broker and look for loads. I can go on there as... Or I can be a broker and go on there and look for trucks, and I can be, you know, a shipper and post all of my loads. And does that make sense?
Yeah, I was just wondering. Yeah, I thought you had to have a broker's license. So that goes in a whole other batch of liability if you go on there and just get a carrier to pull your load.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't either.
Anyone else? Yep.
What percentage of your shipping is by barge?
By barge. What percent of our shipping is by barge? I don't know. I'll probably have to get back to you.
Do you think it's real small?
Like the volume of product that we ship, or just like compared to?
Compared to truck transport. And rail.
We ship a high volume of rail and barge, like as far as like the quantity shipped compared to bags. I don't know what the exact percent would be though, unfortunately. Sorry.
About 100 barges a year. About that. Is that a question?
Yeah, I was just curious, like if you were to break up into three categories, or trucking or rail and your barge, how much barge shipping is still a part of that today? I talked to other people like around the Great Lakes and the other mulch producers who tell me they use barge quite a bit. And I never really thought about it.
say 100 barges a year for trucks?
Yeah, I mean, we ship more truckload shipments, for sure, but you can get more volume, yeah, on a barge, so.
There's about 65 trucks to a barge.
Okay. Well, you don't have the rules that are entering on trucking on barge, do you?
I mean, it's just another industry that you have to work with. I think that the barge and rail, they kind of play by their own rules. There's just other challenges that you face. Yes?
On rail cars, do you own any of your own rail cars, or is it all public cars?
No, we don't own any of our own.
Who thinks rail? Who's looked into the leasing part?
Anyone else?
Any more questions? Thank you, Karen.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a brief break and then 15 minutes, no more. I don't want to encroach on the first time. And then we're going to talk about screening technology.